A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corn. So, you know, where else would one turn for really obscure, niche, and I'm sure for most people, excruciatingly boring information than the My Word Prompts podcast? I'm sorry, that was a bit harsh. Well, I'm actually kind of trolling myself here by calling the things I'm interested in excruciatingly boring, but I'm just picturing someone opening up their podcast feed, if anyone is actually listening through the transom to us, and saying, is this an episode about permanent markers? And yeah, it's going to be an episode about exactly that. So if you don't want to be here, turn away. Herman and Corn, you guys know that I'm very proud of my home inventory system. And it's been a product of necessity. I wouldn't call myself a tree hugger by any means. But over the course of time, I've built up a decent collection of a lot of small things related to technology. Think cables, computer components, whatnot. And my wife and I have also moved apartment. Well, we're going to be doing our second move soon. And just through these experiences, I guess, I've learned the value that if you are in the middle of a project, especially if it's something related to client work, and you're trying to find that one micro HDMI to HDMI cable, and you know that you have it, and it's taking you 30 minutes, and you're going crazy thinking time is evaporating before my eyes. So it got to the point where, and this is why I mentioned my environmentalism, I ordered a cable from AliExpress because I figured that, you know, for $4, I'm not going to spend another hour rooting through my stuff. And I thought, this is crazy. I hate that. I hate that I've just ordered, plastic that's going to travel halfway around the world that I know I already have. I've just no idea where it is. So I set up this inventory system called Homebox, and I've become a huge advocate for it since. Now, I thought the people who I told, people come around to the house and they're like, why do you have an NFC tag on your stuff? And I'm like, you don't have a home inventory system? I thought people would thought I was even more bananas than they might have already thought. But to my surprise, people actually kind of admire it, which is cool. People come in and they're like, oh, that's smart. It's funny. It's the one thing I thought that people would assume was absolutely crazy across the board. But even those who are not so into tech pursuits or my strange tech pursuits thought, that's clever. Anyway, so this is why we've done some episodes about topics like NFC tags, barcodes, labels, because I've been around the block, you guys. I have seen that, paper labels, if you haven't done paper barcodes, you are in for a surprise. Paper barcodes, Jerusalem weather, UV is not a mix that is made in heaven. So I got really tired of, I did my first round of getting everything in order. And then I saw after a year, okay, NFC tags basically just peel off at a gust of wind. You probably don't want to use those for things that it's not going to adhere to. Those industrial labels, we've talked about label makers. We don't need to put anyone through the experience of listening to the industrial label maker conversation a second time. And then there's a category of things that it's just tricky. You're like, let's take a niche component such as a CPU. You know those things that hold a CPU into a motherboard? So I picked up a couple because when I built my server last month, I didn't have them. And these are the kind of things that are really small and very niche and I have on hand. So it's tiny, right? You're not going to put, I wouldn't want to put a sticker in there. It's like, I don't know, it gets hot in there. So these are where you either go down the route of using a engraver, which is one option, and what the professionals do, but doing that in a home environment in a way that actually looks good is kind of messy. Or you buy a marker. And I guess if you were kind of to put it like that to me, I would probably say, let's just buy a marker. I went looking into, of course, what do people who actually need these things to stay on services actually purchase? And my things, what I noticed was, sometimes I write on permanent markers on these little Ziplocs that I organize things into, let's say, a certain type of USB cable. So I might just write on it like USB-A to USB-C. And I noticed that those would not hold up. So I have two questions in one, or a few questions in one, Herman and Korn. I've discovered that there is quite a vibrant world of markers out there. The Japanese and the Germans are overrepresented as the kings of the permanent marker world, or as the heavyweight nations. And it does matter because, besides, it's just frustrating to buy garbage markers from the dollar store that you say, wait, let me try this one. This might actually work. And then you know, it says it's waterproof. You put it out in the rain and then it's washed off. So it's just nice to actually know, or, you know, invest time for once in figuring out what you actually need. What I picked up was a brand called Edding. And I'm using, here's what I really want to dial in on. I gathered that the actual type of the composition of the ink is important. So you've got ones that are based on water, and these are the ones that I feel the ones that don't really adhere well. You've got your alcohol-based, paint-based ones. These are sold in hardware stores. There's kind of two branches, as I see it, to this world of niche markers. One is the hardware side of things, so you'll get some, you know, hardware lines stocking these really good things. And another is actually art stores, which is kind of fun, because my wife's an architect. She's into crafts. Not really something I'm, you know, never painted in my life, but these stores are super friendly and they actually love talking markers. So Herman and Corin, if you are looking at, you're into DIY, you've got a bunch of tools outside and you want to mark them with something that is just going to work, and when the markers run out, you can buy another one and know that you're buying something good. We've got Stadler. We have got oil-based, paint-based, Edding, and I'm sure there's many more. And we've got sizes, the final thing for today's delightful conversation, from 0.7 millimeters all the way up to 2 or 3. So if you were advising someone who wanted to just get a few of these things that they're going to buy quality, what would you be looking at in terms of brand composition? And where do you recommend actually buying these things so that you actually know you're buying from a source that actually knows what they're talking about, and they are selling you stuff that they personally know going to hold up to whatever type of environment you are subjecting the ink to, and hoping that it will stay. And finally, I'm looking at my markers here. AP. I notice this is on all these good quality ones. It says, I believe it's an archival standard, and I'd love to actually know what that little thing means. Over to you two.
Daniel sent us one about permanent markers. And before anyone tunes out thinking this is going to be a snoozer about office supplies, the question he's actually asking is genuinely practical. He runs a home inventory system. He's tried everything. NFC tags, barcodes, labels, engravers, and he's landed on markers as the solution for the stuff that's too small, too hot, or too oddly shaped for stickers. The problem is, most markers are garbage. The ink flakes off Ziploc bags, washes off tools, fades under UV. So he wants to know, if you were advising someone to buy a handful of quality permanent markers that actually hold up to real environments, what brands, what ink composition, what tip sizes, and where do you buy them so you're not getting counterfeits? Plus, he noticed this little AP seal on the good ones and wants to know what that means.
This is exactly the kind of rabbit hole I live for. Daniel's frustration is one I've heard from so many people who do any kind of workshop organization. You spend an hour labeling everything, and 3 months later the ink has ghosted off and you're back to the mystery cable drawer. The marker world is surprisingly deep, and you're right that the Japanese and German manufacturers dominate the top tier. By the way, today's episode script is coming to us courtesy of DeepSeek V4 Pro.
Well, let's see if it knows its way around a hardware store. So where do we start? The ink chemistry or the brands?
Let's start with ink chemistry, because that's really the foundation. Daniel mentioned noticing water-based, alcohol-based, paint-based. That's the right framework. Water-based permanent markers, and I'm using air quotes around permanent, are what you typically find at dollar stores and big box office supply aisles. They use a dye dissolved in water with some glycols and surfactants. The problem is, the dye sits on top of the surface, and water is a terrible binder for anything non-porous. So on plastic, metal, glass, laminated cable jackets, it just doesn't bite. It dries, but it doesn't bond.
Which explains the Ziploc bag problem. Those bags are polyethylene, which is basically a non-stick surface as far as water-based inks are concerned.
Polyethylene and polypropylene have extremely low surface energy. Nothing wants to stick to them, and water-based ink is the worst offender. Now, alcohol-based markers, these are a step up. The solvent is typically ethanol or isopropanol, and it can slightly etch into some plastics, giving the pigment something to grab onto. Sharpie's standard line is alcohol-based. They're fine for paper, cardboard, and some matte plastics, but they still fail on glossy surfaces, metal, and anything that sees outdoor exposure.
If I'm labeling my shovel that lives in the shed and sees rain and sun, alcohol-based isn't going to cut it.
It'll be illegible by next season. Which brings us to the heavy hitters, paint-based and oil-based markers. Paint-based markers use actual paint, pigments suspended in a solvent vehicle, usually xylene or something similar, that evaporates and leaves behind a solid film of pigment and binder. That film physically bonds to the surface. Oil-based markers use an oil-soluble dye in a hydrocarbon solvent that penetrates slightly into porous surfaces and forms a weather-resistant layer. Both types are what you'll find in the industrial marking world. The hardware store aisle with the bold yellow packaging that says industrial and permanent and actually means it.
The trade-off, I assume, is that the solvents in paint-based markers are nasty stuff. You're not using these at the kitchen table.
Xylene, toluene, these are aromatic hydrocarbons. They're toxic, flammable, you need ventilation. But they work. The marker tips are also different. They usually have a valve mechanism. You press the tip down to release more paint, almost like a paint pen. And the tips themselves are often felt or fiber, but heavier duty. Some have metal barrels. These are tools, not stationary.
Let's talk brands. Daniel mentioned Edding and said the Japanese and Germans dominate. Who are the actual players?
Edding is a great place to start. German company, founded in 1960, based near Hamburg. They basically invented the modern permanent marker with the Edding 300 in 1961. The 300 is still their classic. Alcohol-based, fine for general use, but it's not their industrial line. Their heavy-duty stuff is the Edding 700 series. The 750 is a paint marker. The 780 is their top-tier industrial permanent marker, alcohol-based but with a much more aggressive solvent blend. It handles heat up to about 200 degrees Celsius, it's resistant to chemicals, smudge-proof on most surfaces. This is the one Daniel probably came across.
200 degrees Celsius. So, on a CPU clip near a processor, that would actually hold up.
The CPU clip itself isn't hitting 200 degrees. Your CPU might throttle at 100, so the clip is well below that. But the point is, the ink isn't going to degrade from warmth. The Edding 780 also has a 1-3 mm chisel tip, and they specifically claim it writes on almost all surfaces, including polypropylene and polyethylene.
Which is a bold claim. I want to know what almost all means in practice.
In practice, on polyethylene, it'll still wear faster than on metal. Nothing truly bonds permanently to polyethylene, but the Edding 7080 will last much longer than anything water-based. I've seen people use it on cable jackets and get years of legibility. The other German heavyweight is Staedtler. Their LumoColor line comes in a huge range, tip sizes from 0.4 millimeters up to chisel tips. With a low-odor formulation that's still permanent. Not quite as heavy-duty as the Edding 700 series, but excellent for general workshop use.
On the Japanese side,
this is where it gets interesting. The Japanese pen and marker industry is on another level entirely. The big name is Mitsubishi Pencil. They make the Uni brand, and their Uni paint markers are legendary. The PX20 and PX30 are paint markers that come in a wide range of colors, including metallics. They use an oil-based paint that's opaque, weather-resistant, and writes on everything from metal to glass to rubber to leather. The tip is a tough fiber nib that doesn't mush down with pressure. These are the markers you see in industrial settings, auto shops, construction sites.
I've seen those in auto shops now that you mention it. The white ones, especially. Mechanics use them to mark tire positions and write on engine parts.
The white UniPaint PX30 is basically the standard for writing on dark metal and rubber. Another Japanese brand is Sakura. Their solid marker is a crayon marker hybrid, solid paint in a stick form that writes on wet, oily, and rusty surfaces. It doesn't dry out because there's no solvent to evaporate. You peel the paper wrapper to expose more. It's almost primitive, but incredibly effective for hostile environments. There's also Pentel. Their N850 is a durable alcohol-based marker. The N860 is their paint marker. And Zebra, with their Onomai Maculine, an oil-based paint marker particularly good on glossy and laminated surfaces. The Japanese approach is almost obsessive. They test on dozens of substrates, publish detailed chemical resistance charts, offer tip sizes down to surgical precision. It's a culture that takes writing instruments extremely seriously.
It's funny. We think of permanent markers as this mundane thing, but the engineering that goes into a marker that can write on a wet, oily pipe and still be legible 5 years later is impressive. What about the American brands?
Sharpie has an industrial line, the Sharpie Pro and the Sharpie Extreme. The Extreme is their answer to the Edding 700 series. It's alcohol-based, claims to handle UV exposure and extreme temperatures. I'd put it a half step below Edding and Unipaint in absolute durability, but it's widely available and reasonably priced. The Sharpie Mean Streak is their version of the solid paint stick, a grease pencil, great for rough surfaces like concrete and rusty metal. Marksman is another American brand common in welding and fabrication shops. But honestly, the American offerings are playing catch-up to the Germans and Japanese. The R&D culture around stationery in Japan and Germany is just deeper.
Let's talk about tip sizes, because Daniel specifically mentioned the range from 0.7 millimeters up to 2 or 3. What's the right size for what job?
For tiny items, CPU clips, small electronic components, individual cable ends, you want something in the 0.4 to 0.7 millimeter range. The Staedtler LumoColor Permanent comes in a 0.4 millimeter superfine that's almost like writing with a technical pen. For general cable labeling and tool handles, 1 to 2 millimeters is the sweet spot, legibility at arm's length without the ink bleeding and blobbing. For larger items, storage bins, equipment cases, power tools, a 2 to 5 millimeter chisel tip or bullet tip gives you bold, readable marks. The chisel tip is more versatile than most people realize. You can use the narrow edge for fine lines and the broad edge for filling.
What about bullet tip versus chisel tip for someone just labeling inventory?
Bullet tips are more intuitive. They write in any direction with consistent line width. Chisel tips give you line width variation, which is useful for irregular surfaces or when you need both bold headers and fine details with the same marker. For Daniel's use case, labeling cables, components, storage, a fine bullet tip around 1 millimeter and a medium chisel tip around 2 to 3 millimeters would cover 95% of what he needs.
A two-marker starter kit, basically.
You don't need a drawer full of 40 markers. You need maybe 4 or 5 good ones that you know will work, and you replace them as they run out. Which brings us to Daniel's question about where to buy these things without getting counterfeits.
Because if you search for Edding on a certain large online marketplace, you might get something that says Edding on the barrel, but is actually filled with watered-down blue dye from who knows where.
Counterfeit markers are a real problem. The fakes look convincing. Similar packaging, similar barrel design, but the ink is garbage. It dries out in weeks, doesn't adhere, or the tip collapses. Edding has actually published guides on how to spot fakes. The weight of the marker, the quality of the printing on the barrel, the cap fit. But the simplest way to avoid counterfeits is to buy from authorized distributors. In the U.S., that means industrial supply houses like Grainger, McMaster, Carr, or Uline. For art and architecture stores, places like Blick Art Materials or Jerry's Artorama are authorized dealers and they don't mess around with counterfeits. In Europe and elsewhere, direct from the manufacturer's website or a known stationery specialist.
What about Amazon? Because that's where most people are going to end up.
Amazon is a minefield. The problem is commingled inventory. Even if you buy from a listing that says sold by Edding, if Amazon fulfills it from a warehouse where counterfeit stock has been commingled with genuine stock, you might get a fake. If you're going to buy on Amazon, look for listings that say ships from and sold by Amazon rather than third-party sellers, and even then, inspect what you get. But honestly, for something where the whole point is reliability, I'd pay the extra couple of dollars and buy from an industrial supplier or an art store. You're buying maybe 5 markers total. The price difference is negligible compared to the frustration of a label that fails.
If you're in a hardware store, the paint markers are usually locked up in a display case or hanging in the paint section, not in the school supplies aisle. That's a good heuristic.
If you're in the aisle with crayons and glitter glue, you're in the wrong place. The industrial markers are in the tools section, the paint section, or the contractor supplies. The brand names will be things like Markel, Dykem, and Sakura, not Crayola.
Let's pivot to that AP seal Daniel noticed. What does it actually mean?
AP stands for Approved Product. It's a certification from the Art and Creative Materials Institute, a U.S.-based nonprofit that's been around since 1940. The AP seal means the product has been evaluated by a certified toxicologist and found to contain no materials in sufficient quantities to be toxic or injurious to humans, including children. For a marker, this is relevant because permanent markers often contain solvents like xylene and toluene, which are neurotoxic in high concentrations. A marker with the AP seal has been tested and is considered non-toxic under normal use conditions.
It's not an archival standard. It's a safety standard.
And this is a common confusion. AP doesn't mean the ink is archival in the sense of being lightfast or acid-free for document preservation. It means it won't poison you. The archival standards are things like the ISO 9706 standard for paper permanence or the blue wool scale for lightfastness. For permanent markers used in inventory labeling, archival properties aren't really the concern. You care about adhesion, water resistance, UV resistance, and mechanical durability. The AP seal is nice to have because it means you're not inhaling something terrible every time you label a cable, but it's not telling you anything about how well the mark will last.
That's a useful distinction. So if Daniel sees the AP seal on an edding or a steadler, it means the toxicology is clean, but it's not a guarantee of permanence.
The permanence comes from the chemistry and the brand reputation. And on that topic, let's talk about what actually makes a permanent marker permanent on different surfaces. On porous surfaces like paper, cardboard, unfinished wood, the ink soaks in and the pigment gets trapped in the fibers. That's why even a cheap marker is pretty permanent on paper. The paper itself is doing the work. On non-porous surfaces like metal, glass, and plastic, there's nothing to soak into. The ink has to form a film that mechanically and chemically bonds to the surface. This is where paint markers excel because the paint forms a continuous film that cures and hardens. Some use enamels or lacquers that actually cross-link as they dry.
Is there a curing time? If I label a metal tool with a paint marker, do I need to let it sit before handling?
Paint markers have a drying time and a curing time. The drying time, when the solvent evaporates and the mark feels dry to the touch, is usually seconds to a minute. But the curing time, when the paint film fully hardens and reaches maximum adhesion, can be anywhere from a few hours to 24 hours depending on the formulation and the surface. The UniPaint markers, for instance, are dry to the touch almost immediately, but recommend 24 hours for full cure on non-porous surfaces. This is the kind of detail that the marker nerds care about, and that the packaging on a dollar store marker won't mention at all.
If I'm doing a big labeling session on a Saturday, I should leave everything to cure overnight before I start chucking tools back in the drawer.
That's the best practice, and temperature matters. If you're labeling in a cold garage in winter, the cure time can stretch out significantly. Paint markers work best at room temperature, say 15 to 25 degrees Celsius. Below 10 degrees, the paint gets thick, the flow is inconsistent, and the cure is slow.
What about UV resistance? Daniel mentioned paper barcodes and UV not being a match made in heaven. How do these markers handle sunlight?
UV resistance varies a lot by pigment and binder. Black markers tend to be the most UV resistant because carbon black pigment is inherently UV stable. Red and blue are the worst. Organic pigments in those colors break down under UV relatively quickly. If you're labeling something that lives in direct sunlight, black ink is your safest bet. Some industrial markers specifically advertise UV resistance using inorganic pigments. The Edding 7080 claims to be lightfast and weather-resistant. The UniPaint markers also hold up well outdoors. But no marker is truly permanent in direct sun for years on end. The pigment will eventually chalk and fade. If you need absolute UV permanence, you're looking at engraving or metal stamping, which, as Daniel noted, is messy and impractical for most home use.
For a hammer that lives in a toolbox in the garage, a paint marker will last essentially forever. For a shovel that leans against the outside of the shed in full Arizona sun, you'll get a few years before it starts to fade.
That's a fair estimate. And even then, it'll fade gradually. It won't just disappear one day. You'll have time to refresh it.
Let's get concrete. If someone listening wants to go buy markers this weekend, Daniel's situation, home inventory, mix of cables and tools and plastic bins, what's the shopping list?
Here's what I'd recommend. First, a fine point paint marker for small items, the UniPaint PX20 with a 0.8 to 1.2 millimeter bullet tip. Black is the workhorse, white if you're labeling dark surfaces. Second, a medium chisel tip industrial marker for larger items, the Edding 780, black, with the 1 to 3 millimeter chisel tip. That's your general purpose labeler. Third, if you're labeling anything that gets wet or lives outdoors, a solid paint marker like the Sakura solid marker in black or white. It'll write on wet, oily, rusty surfaces and it never dries out. That's three markers, probably $40 total, and you're covered for 95% of home inventory tasks.
If you want to go up to five, add a stapler Lumo Color Permanent in 0.4mm Superfine for really tiny components, and a metallic UniPaint PX30 in silver or gold for labeling dark or clear items where black doesn't show up.
That's a perfect starter set. And the key thing is, once you buy these, you'll know they work. When one runs out, you buy the exact same model. You're not gambling on a new brand every time.
One thing Daniel didn't ask about, but that I think is worth mentioning. What about surface prep? If I'm labeling a cable that's been sitting in a drawer for 2 years and has a thin film of dust and hand oil on it, even the best marker is going to struggle.
Surface prep is half the battle. For any permanent marker to adhere well, the surface needs to be clean and dry. For most home inventory, a quick wipe with isopropyl alcohol on a cloth is enough. It removes oils, dust, and any residue that would interfere with adhesion. For really stubborn surfaces, things with adhesive residue, old labels, grease, you might need something stronger like acetone, but be careful with acetone on plastics because it can melt some of them. After cleaning, let the surface dry completely, then mark, and then let it cure. It's a 30-second investment per item that makes the difference between a mark that lasts years and one that rubs off in weeks.
That's the kind of detail that separates the people whose labels are still there next year from the people who are redoing everything every 6 months. It's not just the marker, it's the process.
That connects to Daniel's larger point about the home inventory mindset. He's someone who's tried NFC tags, barcodes, labels, engravers. He's iterated through the solutions and landed on markers as the right tool for specific edge cases. The marker isn't a replacement for the whole system. It's the tool for the 5% of items that don't take a label well. That's smart systems thinking.
It's also a reminder that the cheap option is often the most expensive. A dollar store marker that fails means you lose the item you were trying to organize, or you buy a duplicate, like Daniel did with that micro HDMI cable. The $4 cable from AliExpress, plus the shipping time and the environmental guilt, is the real cost of a bad marker.
The micro HDMI cable story is so relatable. You know you have one. You saw it 3 months ago. Now you've been through every drawer, every bin, every box, and it's gone. You end up ordering a replacement, and the original turns up 2 weeks later in a bag you swear you checked. A good marker and 30 seconds of labeling would have prevented all of it.
There's also an interesting cultural dimension here that Daniel touched on. The surprise that people admire the inventory system rather than thinking it's crazy. Home organization used to be seen as a slightly obsessive hobby. Now, with the proliferation of stuff, cables, adapters, dongles, chargers, batteries, all the detritus of modern tech life, being organized is almost a survival skill. People walk into a house where everything is labeled and tracked, and instead of thinking, this person is neurotic, they think, I want this.
The normalization of home inventory systems is interesting. Part of it is the IKEA effect. The Marie Kondo effect, the whole decluttering movement. But part of it is just that the average household has so many more small, similar-looking items than it did 20 years ago. In the 90s, you had maybe a drawer of cables, a few phone cords, some RCA cables, a coax. Now you have USB-A to USB-C, USB-C to USB-C, Thunderbolt, micro HDMI, mini HDMI, DisplayPort, and on and on. They all look basically the same from a distance. Without a labeling system, you're just guessing.
The cost of guessing wrong is time. Daniel's 30-minute search for a cable is not unusual. Multiply that across a year of small projects and client work, and the productivity loss is real.
There's a study from the National Association of Professional Organizers that found the average person spends a year of their life looking for lost items. That's waking hours, cumulatively. A good inventory system with reliable labeling is basically buying back weeks of your life.
A $10 marker is one of the highest return investments you can make. I like that framing.
And let's talk about one more thing Daniel mentioned, the distinction between the hardware store marker world and the art store marker world. They are different cultures. Hardware store markers are about function, period. They come in black, white, red, yellow, maybe blue. The packaging is ugly. The specifications are about temperature range, chemical resistance, surface compatibility. Art store markers are about expression. They come in hundreds of colors, different opacities, different finishes. If you go into a good art supply store and say, I need a marker that will write on polyethylene and survive outdoors, they'll have opinions. They might steer you toward a specific Molotow or Posca or Montana acrylic marker. Those are graffiti and mural markers, not industrial markers, but some of them are incredibly durable.
Posca, those are the water-based paint markers, right? The ones with the opaque, almost gouache-like finish.
Yes, Posca markers are water-based pigment paint markers from Uni Mitsubishi, same parent company as the Uni Paint industrial markers. They're technically water-based, but they're not dye-based like a kid's marker. They use a pigment suspension that dries to a water-resistant opaque film. They're popular with artists because they're low odor, non-toxic, and the colors are vibrant. For home inventory, they're a decent option for indoor items that don't see heavy wear. The opacity is great for labeling dark surfaces. They won't hold up to outdoor exposure or heavy abrasion as well as a solvent-based paint marker, but for labeling plastic bins in a closet, they're excellent.
There's a whole spectrum from art markers that happen to be durable, to industrial markers that happen to come in colors. Daniel's wife, being an architect in the crafts, probably has opinions on this spectrum already.
That's the fun of it. This is a topic where you can walk into a store and have a genuine conversation with someone who knows their stuff. There's a community of marker enthusiasts out there, people who do swatch tests on different surfaces, who compare the opacity of different white markers on black paper, who know the exact solvent blend in a particular Sakura marker. The internet is full of these deep, obsessive reviews, and they're incredibly useful when you're trying to figure out what to buy.
That reminds me, Daniel asked specifically about the 0.7 to 3 millimeter size range. What about markers that go even finer? Is there a practical limit?
The finest permanent markers go down to about 0.3 millimeters. The Staedtler LumaColor Permanent comes in that size, and so does the Sakura Pigma Micron, though the Micron is more of an archival pen than an industrial marker. Below 0.3, you're in technical pen territory, and those aren't suitable for labeling rough surfaces. The tip would catch and wear down immediately. For practical home inventory, 0.4 millimeters is about as fine as you need. The challenge at that size isn't the marker, it's your handwriting.
My handwriting at 0.4 would be an illegible squiggle.
That's where a label maker with a tiny font size actually wins. But for the items where a label won't fit or won't stick, the fine marker is the only game in town. Daniel's point about CPU clips is a perfect example. Those are barely bigger than a postage stamp. Oddly shaped, they get warm, and there's no flat surface for a sticker. A fine paint marker is the ideal solution.
Let's circle back to the Edding 7OT for a moment, since that's the one Daniel specifically found. You mentioned it handles heat up to 200 degrees Celsius. What about cold? If I label something that lives in a freezer or an unheated garage in Minnesota.
Most industrial markers handle cold fine once the mark is cured. The issue with cold is during application. If the marker itself is cold, the ink thickens and doesn't flow. If the surface is cold, the solvent doesn't evaporate properly and adhesion suffers. The Edding 780 is rated for application down to about minus 10 degrees Celsius, which covers most practical scenarios. Once cured, the mark is stable from minus 30 to plus 200 Celsius. That's more than enough for any home use.
What about on silicone? Silicone cables and cases are notorious for rejecting any kind of adhesive or ink.
Silicone is the final boss of labeling. It has incredibly low surface energy, lower than polyethylene. Almost nothing sticks to it. Paint markers will write on it, but the mark will eventually rub off with handling. The only truly permanent solution is a silicone-specific ink, a two-part paint system not available in marker form. For home use on silicone cables, the best approach is to use a label that wraps all the way around and adheres to itself, or a heat shrink label. Markers on silicone are a temporary solution at best.
If you've got a silicone USB cable, skip the marker and use a wraparound label.
Or a colored heat shrink tube with a label inside it. That's actually a very durable solution. You slide a piece of clear heat shrink over a printed label, shrink it down, and it's basically permanent. But that's a whole other episode.
We should probably start wrapping up, but before we do, I want to touch on one more thing. Daniel mentioned the frustration of buying garbage markers that say waterproof, but wash off in the rain. There's a labeling honesty problem in the marker industry. What does permanent actually mean on a marker package, legally?
There's no regulatory standard for the word permanent on a marker. A manufacturer can call a marker permanent if it doesn't wash off paper under normal conditions. That's it. It doesn't have to survive outdoors, adhere to plastic, or resist UV. The term is essentially marketing. This is why you have to ignore the word permanent on the barrel and look at the actual specifications, or better yet, look at what professionals in industrial settings use. If welders and mechanics and construction crews are using a particular marker, it's permanent in the way you actually care about.
The heuristic is, if the packaging shows someone riding on a birthday card, it's probably not what you want. If the packaging shows someone riding on a steel beam, you're in the right place.
Look for words like industrial, paint marker, weather resistant, chemical resistant. Those terms actually mean something in an industrial context. And look for the temperature range, the surface compatibility list, the drying time. If the manufacturer is giving you that level of detail, they're serious about their product.
Which brings us back to the brands. Edding, Staedtler, Unipaint, Sakura, Pentel. These companies publish actual technical data sheets. You can look up the exact solvent composition, the pigment type, the adhesion test results. That transparency is itself a signal of quality.
It's why Daniel's instinct to research this instead of just grabbing whatever's at the checkout counter is the right one. A little bit of research up front saves you from the slow burn frustration of a labeling system that quietly fails over the course of a year. There's something uniquely maddening about picking up a cable, seeing the ghost of a label, and having no idea what it used to say.
The ghost label. I know that feeling. It's worse than no label at all because you did the work and it still failed.
Now you're back to square one, plus annoyance. So to summarize Daniel's questions directly, for brands, Edding 700 Series, Unipaint PX Line, Staedtler Lumicolor, and Sakura Solid Marker are the top tier. For composition, paint-based or oil-based for durability, alcohol-based only for indoor, low-wear applications. For tip sizes, 0.4 to 0.7 millimeters for tiny items, 1 to 2 millimeters for general use. 2 to 5 millimeters for large items. For buying, go to industrial supply houses or reputable art stores to avoid counterfeits. And the AP seal means approved product. It's a toxicology certification, not an archival standard.
That's the shopping list. Clear, concise, actionable. Daniel, if you're listening, your micro HDMI cable days are numbered.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The country of Liechtenstein is the world's largest producer of false teeth.
Right.
That's one to chew on.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes like this one, and we know you do, head to myweirdprompts.com.
Or find us on Spotify. We'll be back with something completely different next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.